What's good, wagering world? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World. I'm in here with my co-host, the OG of the show. He's been with me since day one, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know, and that's Spread a Stat. What's good, Spread?
Man, I'm probably going to be the only Sacramento Kings fan for a while. This team does not know how to build a fan base, but it's football season. We're not going to lament about that. How are you doing today? Are you excited as week zero kicks off?
Yeah, I'm excited. Football's back. You know, birthday coming up. Been hectic, man, because of the move. You know how it is. This show's called Big Moves. You move to a new ranch miles and miles away from where you grew up. I moved up the mountain a little bit in Summerlin, out to West Summerlin. You know, Ceno moved back to Houston. Speaking of Ceno, guys, he should be in at any moment. He's having some technical difficulties because he got a new phone, and you know how that goes. So I guess he's trying to figure out his new iPhone and how to get the camera working, but it was giving him a lot of issues. That's why we're a little late because we attempted to wait on him, but he was having some issues. So we had to keep things rolling. We didn't want you guys sitting there too long. But, yeah, big moves going on in the wagering world and in the world, period, man. So I'm trying to get adjusted to things. I'm walking over boxes. I'm walking over bags, you know. So that's one thing. Are you settled in now finally at the ranch? Have you finally got everything
under? Yeah, I'm finally settled in. I took a week off the week before last, and I finally went through those boxes. You know how when you move, you throw some boxes down in the – I have a basement here, so I finally got them out. Settled in and just in time for football season, right? So pretty excited for football season to kick off. Preseason's fun for the NFL, but I can't wait for the real thing.
Yeah, I'm still getting adjusted, man, and I'll be so glad when that part of the process is over, because, you know, like, moving doesn't end until you get set up at home and get comfortable. You don't know where anything is, and, you know, we got three kids, so we got a lot of stuff in the house to get through, man. Yeah. But it's still a blessing and all, man. Me and the wife were able to move to a dream spot that we've always wanted to be in the neighborhood we always want to be in. So we can't complain. It's a true blessing. Speaking of moves, what's the biggest move in the offseason in pro football? I must be saying my name.
In my mind, it has to be the quarterback shakeup between Seattle and Minnesota there. With J.J. McCarthy taking over for the Vikings. Now that I know the name Sam Darnold doesn't really ring a lot of bells and get people excited, but you look at the performance last year, I know the last two games were tough, but he had a top five quarterback season. Kevin O'Connell's got a lot of confidence that he can get it reproduce that with J.J. McCarthy, but essentially a rookie. I understand that he got a year in the locker room to understand how the NFL process works, adjust to the game day preparation and watch how the pros do it. However, seems like it's a lot to put on a rookie coming off that huge 14-3 year. And then I'm curious to see, you know, this is a referendum on Darnold. Is this really a career turnaround? Is this a Rich Gannon type story where a guy struggles as a quote unquote journeyman for years and breaks through? Or is this the product of Kevin O'Connell and will he return to being a below average quarterback outside in Seattle, not in Minnesota there? So to me, that's the biggest shakeup. Boy, if McCarthy's good, that NFC North is loaded. If Darnold's good, the NFC West, which we're going to be talking about in a little bit today, is loaded as well. So I think those were the biggest moves of the offseason. What did you think was the biggest move?
Well, just to piggyback on what you said, Seahawks did hire Clint Kubiak. That's what we kind of got confused with on the last show when we were talking about was the last OC. I think OC you thought I was Saints. Talking about the Eagles. I was talking about the Eagles. You thought I was talking about the Saints. Yeah, Clint Kubiak did a really good job with Derek Carr, so that's a miracle in itself. Being able to revamp him. But he bails on the Saints just in time, as the Saints obviously are playing the long game and trying to get their hands on Arch Manning, which would be a dream scenario for them with him coming from being born and raised in New Orleans and, you know, being New Orleans royalty, being the grandson of Archie Manning and, you know, the nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning. But Clint Kubiak is a good hire for the Seahawks, but I'll really be interested in you speaking about Darnold. I honestly don't know if Sam Darnold will be their quarterback by the end of the season. Jalen Milroe looks really good in the preseason. A lot of speed, a lot of athleticism. I've been watching him since he was in Katy, Texas, in Houston, you know, and he's a speedy kid, man, and he can throw a lot better than people think. I think that him having that season under Kalen DeBoer is going to do wonders for him on the pro level. A lot of people don't talk about development and how important that is, as we're seeing now with Anthony Richardson having all these setbacks. I know that injuries have cost him a lot of games, but also with them not wanting to move forward in Indianapolis, I think it's because how behind he started with not getting a lot of quarterback development in college with Billy Napier, who likes to run more of an option brand of football. But I do think that Darnold isn't, I'd say he's a downgrade. I don't want to be disrespectful to him because he is a decent player and had a pretty good season last year until the end, as you said, but the end is what counts. And when it came down to getting the Vikings into the playoffs, he kind of dropped the ball and he kind of laid an egg a few times and kind of made us remember why he's no longer the quarterback for the New York Jets who drafted him. My biggest move, I'd say, in the NFL, it's a lot of things that happen, but you know how serious I take it with coaches, man. And I really got to go with Mike Vrabel. I mean, Mike Vrabel is a huge hire for the Patriots. As you know, he was a three-time champion there, first team all pro, spent eight seasons there. A lot of people don't know Vrabel was drafted actually by the Steelers. And he was kind of like a special teams guy. And then Bill Belichick figured out that he could do some great things with him. He's the only defensive player actually to score multiple touchdowns on offense in the Super Bowl. As you know, Tom Brady used to throw it to him a lot around the goal line. But Vrabel is a leader of men. He didn't have much to work with Tennessee and still did a really phenomenal job with that organization. He led the Titans to the number one seed in 2021. He also was coach of the year that season as well. But that was with Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback. So I think that he can do a really good job with the talent that they do have in New England. I'm a huge fan of the running back that they had that came in from Ohio State. As you know, everyone loves their defense, and especially that great cornerback that they have, young cornerback. So I think that the Patriots are going to make a huge leap this year. I think that they're a lot closer to the Bills than people think. It all depends on Drake May. I'm not as high on people as on Drake May as others are, but
really,
Well, I like his athleticism. I hate his decision making. He does some bonehead things sometimes with the ball, and that's going back to North Carolina. He doesn't protect the ball, so that's one thing that I do worry about.
How do you think Josh McDaniels will help his development?
We'll see. Josh McDaniels, maybe he's become a different guy, but he's one of those dudes who kind of is a do-it-my-way type of coach. So I don't know if he's going to be able to fit the offense in a way that it highlights what Drake May does best. I hope he doesn't try to turn him into Brady because he's not as accurate quarterback, you know, in the mid-range like Brady. May tends to miss a lot of balls. He sells a lot. And if you're not accurate in that medium range throwing the ball in the NFL, you know it's going to be a lot of interceptions. So I'd be careful for that. But just as far as in team morale and being just a much better coach than Gerard Mayo. Gerard Mayo, he got a lot of flack, you know, maybe a little bit more than he should have. He only got 1 year, one opportunity. I kind of wonder sometimes if the owner did it just to keep up his image, because you know he hangs with Meek Mills and stuff and he wants to act like he's this big liberal guy. So maybe he hired Gerard Mayo for press, but he didn't allow him to stay long. So now it's on Mike Vrabel. And I think Mike Vrabel is going to put the Patriots back to where Bill Belichick had them as a really good, sound team that plays really good on defense and special teams. And we've seen that early in just the preseason with how they play. So, yeah, I think that Mike Vrabel, in my opinion, is the biggest pickup in the NFL, the biggest offseason move. College football, you know, I'm a college football fanatic. I know you don't follow it as much, but we're talking about moves. Who had the biggest offseason move, in your opinion, in college football? if you have any opinion on that.
I'll have to throw that one to you. I'm not as well versed. I'm going to just take your picks for the first couple of weeks, watch the games that we play, and then I'll start to develop my own opinion. But I do so much because, you know, of course I do NFL best ball content all summer. So I'm just so focused in on the NFL. I don't cover the college football moves, the offseason moves as much as you do. And now with the transfer portal, it's like these teams flip their whole – they already college had high turnover, right, because people graduate.
Yeah. But
the turnover is just insane. It's almost becoming, to me, almost like college basketball where it's more and more of a coach's league because the turnover is so wild. What did you think the biggest move was?
Once again, staying with coaching, because I feel like coaching is the most important thing when it comes to football. A coach can make a huge difference with a football team, not only from X's and O's, but also morale. So I think it'll be Penn State stealing Jim Knowles from Ohio State, their in-conference rival, who they will be competing against to win the Big Ten this year and for the national championship. Both teams were college football playoff semifinalists last year, and Ohio State ends up lifting the trophy. Jim Knowles was huge for Ohio State, man. Last year, their defense ranked first in yards allowed, first in scoring defense, and first in red zone defense. So he brings that skill to all the talent that Penn State always recruits. James Franklin does a really good job at recruiting excellent defensive players. And it's going to continue. I forgot the kid's name they have now. That's the new linebacker wing. They call it Sticks. That's number 11. And it's a tradition that was started by LeVar Arrington, now passed down to the kid that just went to New York Giants as their number one pick. And now they have another kid. I'm sorry, I don't have his name right here in front of me. I forgot his name, but he's a really good player as well. Oh, you know what? I think it's LeVar Arrington Jr. Now that I think about it, it's LeVar's son.
Let me look that up.
Yeah, that's who it is. I'm sorry. It is. It's Arrington's son who's going to wear that number this year. So
yeah,
they just have a great tradition over there with defense and those. It's somehow this one of the best uniforms you're going to see, and they're just so basic and plain, all white and white with the Nittany blue. But it's a tradition, and they also have a great tradition on defense for many years, going back to Joe Paterno days and the other DC who, you know, went out in infamy with the scandal that went on out there that was just absolutely disgusting. But you look over that and just talking football and X's and O's, and, you know, within the game, Penn State has always been a really good defensive team. And I think that that tradition is going to continue, and it's going to really go to the next level with Jim Knowles. They're, you know, coordinating that defense and getting guys in the right places. And he really understands defensive line. He gets the best out of defensive lines. Oklahoma State has really fallen off since he left. Van Gundy always had offense, but Jim Knowles brought defense there for 2 years, and that's why they were really at the top of the Big 12. And you notice that after Jim Knowles left, it was a fall off. And I expect a fall off with Ohio State as well. Matt Patricia, who I'm not that big on, becomes the DC at Ohio State. A lot of pro experience, but not a lot of college experience. So we'll see how the pencil does. You know, he keeps the pencil all of the time. We'll see how he does as he crashed out completely when it came to pro football, being a head coach when he took over Detroit. Let's see if he can get it done as the DC for Ohio State. But Jim Knowles going to Penn State is a huge move, and I think that's the biggest one in college football. Let's get to the present real quick, Spirit.
All right, let's talk about it. Let's stick with college football. You had brought it up earlier. You know, more and more with these rule changes, football has become more and more betting the quarterbacks and the coaches, right? I mean, I hate to be reductive, and I understand every position on the field matters, but quarterbacks and coaches really seem to do the most when it comes to getting these wins and covering these point spreads. Which quarterbacks are you looking to back this year? Who do you think is maybe undervalued? And then we'll move on to your fades.
Man, my favorite guy is John Mateer. And it's funny because Texas, this shows you how powerful the rivalries are in college football. Some Texas fans, I don't know if they did it themselves, but, you know, like edited a PDF or something, or if it was actual something off of Venmo. They got some information on this kid, John Mateer, and said that he was paying off his buddies for betting when he was a freshman at Washington State.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think the NCAA is taking too much into it because people say all types of weird stuff on Venmo. You know, these kids are young and immature, so it's no telling, you know, maybe they were just playing. And but if it's no way to really, you know, prove that he was gambling, like they don't have him going in a casino on camera or getting like maybe his location and seeing him make a bet from his phone. They really don't have anything. So, but when it comes to just actual football, this kid is different, man. And I can't wait to see him on the big stage with a traditional power like Oklahoma. Clearly an upgrade over Jackson Arnold, who was the quarterback last year. They do have a freshman who was pretty good last season, but he'll be sitting behind Matias, a veteran now. He played at Washington State for 3 seasons, started the last season he started. He kind of at the end of the year, he became the starter in his sophomore year. But his junior year, you know, he put up some really good numbers, man. 65% passing, 3,139 yards in the air. But what I like about him most is his dual threat ability, man. He's a great athlete, a lot more burst than you think. He tends to really make a lot of big splash plays. So I'm high on John Mateer, regardless of whether the stuff on Venmo is true or not. I think that he's going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate this season. I think he's going to lift Brett Venables' team up back into the national spotlight again. Also, I'm a huge fan of Kevin Jennings. If you remember, Spread, I talked about this kid, 2 years ago before anyone was even talking about him when he was coming out of Oak Cliff. I think he went to Carter High School, famous high school in the Dallas area. He's changed everything about SMU, took him to the college football playoffs last year. This kid is real twitchy. He's a little undersized, but he's a baller. He has a lot of dog in him, a lot of heart. So Kevin Jennings at SMU is a kid that I'll be looking to back. Also, we're going to go with Diago Pavia. You know, he's one of my favorite quarterbacks in college football. I used to back him a lot at New Mexico State. Now he's at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is one of those teams that are going to surprise some people again this year. Perfect place for Diago Pavia. Gets a chance to play against the SEC, but still remains an underdog, which he really relishes in that role. And I think that he's able to really show some really exciting plays this year in the SEC. So Diago Pavia, big heart, man. Just a really good kid to bet on, man. So we're going to roll with Diago Pavia as one of our quarterbacks to also bet. Another kid I've been talking about a while. This one might be my favorite. Devon Dampier. He's from the Arizona area. Kind of reminds me of Cam Ward. Same size, same speed, same live arm. He was at New Mexico. No receivers. Bronco Mendenhall is a good coach, so he was drawing up some great plays. I bet a lot of New Mexico games last year. When I say his receivers did not help him one bit, maybe the worst receiving class in Division I football because they were dropping everything, man. And now Dampier gets a chance to go play for the OG, for Whittingham at Utah. Utah, as you know, they base their whole team on offensive line, running the ball, defense. So I believe that Dampier is going to be his best in this situation. He's going to shine out there in the Big Ten with Utah. And I think that Utah are going to surprise some people. Not us, because we've been backing them for a long time. We know how great a coach Kyle Whittingham is. I think he's one of the longest tenure coaches in college football. Maybe 21 seasons, I want to say, he's been the head coach there. And before that, I believe he was the defensive coordinator for 9. So I expect big things from Devon Dampier. That's a name to remember. Damon Williams Jr. at Washington. I got Jed Fish. We made a lot of money with him at Arizona. He decided to chase the big bucks and go to Washington last year, down year. A lot of the alumni are not happy, especially after they were spoiled by all the success the previous coach had when he was able to take them to the national title game. And we know that Washington has a really strong tradition. I think that he's finally found his quarterback. The same type of way it took a while for him to get the right quarterback in place at Arizona and we saw Fifita come in and play really well along with McMillan, another guy that we talked about first, Tatario McMillan. We talked about him first on this show as the best receiver in college football 2 years ago, and now this year he's the first receiver taken in the NFL draft, and he's out there with Bryce Young in Carolina and expected to do big things. I think that Damon Williams, like Fifita, will do a lot of good work for Jeff Fish at Washington, and that they're going to surprise some people in the Big Ten. Seattle is always a tough trip. Damon Williams is one of those type of kids that he's a little undersized, but he's very athletic, and he's a surprisingly accurate quarterback, man. He can make things happen with his legs and his arm, and I think that's the dynamic side that was missing from the offense. We know that Jed Fish is just a good, solid all-around coach, and I think that Washington is going to surprise some people with Damon Williams. Have a couple honorable mentions. Darren Mensah, he came from Tulane. A lot of people didn't watch Tulane. I watched him extensively. Really accurate passer, 6'3", prototype pocket quarterback, man. But he can tuck it if he needs to. Watch him at Duke. I think that he does a good job over there at Duke with Manny, what is his name? Who's the coach over there? I think it's used to be the DC from Miami. Oh, man, Manny. I can't remember his name, but he's a pretty good coach, man. He replaces Mike Elko, who left Duke and went to A&M. But I do think that he's an upgrade completely for them as Malik Murphy leaves Duke. He goes now to Oregon State. And then my sleeper is Austin Simmons. I told people last year, it always stood out to me. We bet that game when Ole Miss had Georgia come in town, and we were all on Ole Miss, and they started out so shaky. And Jackson Dart was shook dealing with those Georgia Bulldog defensive linemen, and he was pissing all over himself, turning the ball over and scared, and they couldn't get anything going. And then he got injured. It was something small, like a tweak of an ankle. Sat out a series, and they brought in Austin Simmons, left-handed electric kid that can do it all, man, on offense. And he came in throwing darts, like doing the things that darts should have been doing. He was throwing darts, and Austin Simmons got them down the field, scored a touchdown on Georgia. And in that game, the Rebels never looked back. They ended up winning that one against Georgia. Dart gets himself back together after that and gets in the game and kind of rides the momentum that Austin Simmons set. But Austin Simmons isn't being talked about a lot. You know that he has a really good coach over there. And you know that his coach is very innovative. So I think that you're going to be surprised with Ole Miss this year and Austin Simmons. I think that they get a lot of upsets in the SEC that people aren't going to expect them. And they're going to, you know, we base a win on covering spreads on the wager world. It's not necessarily on wins and losses. So I think that he's going to really, really surprise some people, man. You can never go wrong when you have a coach as good as Lane Kiffin, man. And now he has a quarterback that I think can run his offense at a higher level than we've seen in the past. So those are my guys to watch and ones I'm going to be betting on. It's a lot of guys that are getting too much hype. And we're going to talk about next the guys we're going to fade.
Let's hear it. Who are we going to fade next season, college football quarterbacks and coaches?
Well, it's a group of guys, man, that I don't trust them, man. Simple as that. One of those guys is going to definitely be Jackson Arnold. I know that we're going into a situation with him going to OU. OU does have, no, excuse me, leaving OU and going to Auburn. Auburn does have a lot of talent. Like, no one's doubting that. But Arnold's kind of undersized. His main issue with me isn't necessarily him. He is inconsistent. But now you got Hugh Freeze coaching him. And you know what I think about Hugh Freeze, Spreads. You remember we had a little beef going on, him and I, where I called him out on not properly developing Malik Willis. And it seems like I was right, because Malik Willis was not ready for the pros. That's why he had to bounce around. And now he's finally getting coached properly on how to play quarterback out there in Green Bay with Matt LaFleur. And we've seen how his game has jumped since he came to Green Bay from when he first hit the league. My problem with Hugh Freeze's offense is he still runs that offense where they're showing cards on the sideline, and that's not helping kids who are trying to make it to the next level. You need a quarterback that can go through the line, make adjustments, make checks, and had some of the offense under his control. You know, that's why I like so much about Shador. I like the fact that he has so much control of that offense. Same with Cam Ward. A lot of control of the offense, and that prepares you more for the pro game. I don't know, man. Jackson Arnold, he didn't even start in high school. He was a backup to Eli Stowers, who's now a tight end, actually one of the better tight ends in the country at Vanderbilt. He was benched last year after four starts in Norman. I just don't think he can get it done, and it's horrible for Auburn fans because they really have some really great, talented receivers. They got Eric Singleton Jr., who came over from Georgia Tech, and they also have Cam Coleman, who's coming back, who was a great freshman player for them last year. So I just think that people today were saying that they think that they're going to win 9 games. They do have a really easy schedule. Hugh Freeze set it up so he could keep his job, but even with that said, I don't think that he gets it done. I think that before the season is over, we end up seeing one of their backup players. They have some really good backups. Ashton Daniels transferred from Stanford. A lot of playing time last year at Stanford. They weren't that good win-loss-wise, but Ashton Daniels is a big, strong kid that can run it and throw it. And then they also have super freshman Deuce Knight. So I think we see one of those quarterbacks before the year is over. So I will be fading Jackson Arnold and Auburn. Another player that I'm not high on is the guy who loves to cosplay Mahomes, Dylan Raiola. I'm not high on Dylan Raiola, man. He played at 3 high schools when he was in school, man. That's a lot of turnover for high school. You know, his dad went to Nebraska. That was his alma mater, so he ends up going there. Good coaching, Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule's teams usually tend to really show up and do well in their third season. I don't know about this year. One, they're in the Big Ten, which is the toughest conference probably in America. And then this kid doesn't protect the ball, you know, and he's more hyped than anything. His arm isn't that strong. He's a finesse passer, which can work sometimes because he is pretty accurate and short and medium range passes, which if you're hitting guys on the run, you get a lot of yards after the catch. The new OC is my guy, Dana Hoeks, and shout out to Dana. He's a friend of my guy, John Granada. I met him a couple times before. Dana's a really nice guy, man. Really cool dude. OG. But I don't know if he's going to be a good mesh with Dylan Raiola. He does have the right idea already because I heard that he was saying, like, the first thing that he noticed when he went to practice with Nebraska was that the receivers don't block. And he's like, you can't run my offense and not block on the edges. So he said he's going to get the ball out of Dylan's hands a lot quicker because he understands the longer he sits on it, the more probability that he's going to turn the ball over. So he does have OG. He does have Dane Key, who was a great player for Kentucky. He was the best offensive piece that they had. So that's huge for Kentucky losing him. But Dane Key is now at Nebraska. But I just think that Dylan Raiola is a decent player, but he's more hyped than he is good. So I will be fading him in Nebraska this year. Another guy, Joey Aguilar, watched him extensively at Appalachian State. He's a turnover machine. Josh Heupel is a quarterback whisperer, and he still won't be able to save this kid, man. It's just that he's too loose with the ball. He tries to force way too many plays down the field. He played junior college at Diablo Valley, wasn't recruited out of high school, transferred to UCLA initially. But then it ended up that Nico Emavila comes there to Westwood. So he ends up taking his position in Tennessee. Remember, Nico had the big NIL situation in Tennessee because his dad wanted him to get more money and stuff. And he ends up dropping out of that school and leaving after a successful season last year where Tennessee made it to the college football playoffs. 14 picks last year for Joey Aguilar. That's not good, man. Also, he missed the Tennessee spring workouts, but he still was named the starter. He doesn't have Dylan Sampson anymore in the backfield. All the top wide receivers are gone. They're really thin at the skills position. 4 new starters. I just cannot trust Joey Aguilar with the inaccurate passing that I saw from him in my years of watching him at Appalachian State be able to compete in the SEC. We know the SEC is going to always have the best athletes on defense, man. So I just see him as a turnover machine. He's going to be a real, real fade for me. I'll be fading Tennessee, especially when they get in conference play. Carson Beck. We know we talked about him a lot last year, about Carson Beck how they were giving Shador all these problems about showing the watch, but no one said anything about Carson Beck getting a private jet deal. And if you remember, before the season started last year, Spread, I said that Carson Beck was about to fall off because he got the private jet deal, and no kid in college should have access to private jets. It's not going to end well. And we saw that last year. And now he moves on from Georgia, leaves a top, you know, school to go play with Miami, got his Lamborghini stole the first month he was there. His girlfriend broke up with him, so because he followed her to go to Miami. I think his girlfriend played basketball or something over there. And now they've broken up, so I'm sure he's chasing all these South Beach baddies. But he's also going to be a victim of bad coaching, man. I just don't trust Mario Cristobal, not when it matters. I think he's not a really good game manager. He's a great recruiter. So I think that Carson Beck will be a fave for me this year. I think that he's more hype than, you know, people think. And lastly, let's go with Cade Klubnik. I don't know why everyone's so high on him. I watched him play every start from his first start at Clemson. Maybe because, you know, he was a really good high school quarterback, one of the best high school quarterbacks we've seen in Texas. He's the leading passer all time at Westlake High School. That's a powerhouse school in Austin. He holds the record over just a ridiculous quarterback alumni over there. They've had Drew Brees, Nick Foles, Sam Ehlinger. And of them all, Cade Klubnik is the, you know, record holder of everything. But he holds the ball too long for my taste. He's also played really small and big games his entire career. They couldn't get anything done offensively last year against Tennessee or Georgia. And I just don't expect much for him. I think it's more hype than anything. And they were saying that he's a better NFL prospect than Cam Ward and Shador Sanders, which is ridiculous. So I think that Cade Klubnik is getting a lot of hype. I think Clemson will win some games this year because Dabo Swinney is a really good coach. But as you've seen with the quarterbacks that he's produced from Clemson, besides Deshaun Watson's good season, all-pro season with the Texans, what have you seen from Clemson quarterbacks and Dabo's long tenure at, you know, over there? They have not been good pros. So I don't expect much from Cade Klubnik compared to the hype that he's getting. So he'll be one that I like to fade. My honorable mention actually is everyone's favorite, and I like the kid. I like his personality. I like his athleticism, but I don't know if he can really play ball, and that's Arch Manning. And I most likely will be fading him week one. Everyone is on Texas, and I think that I'm leaning Ohio State. I know Ohio State will be having a new quarterback, too, with Saiyan, and they'll be missing their DC, but they'll have a lot of good players coming back, and I just think that's a tough start for a first-time start on the road. Another thing for me is if you're that good and in the position that Texas was in to win a national championship, I just feel like he should have been a starting quarterback if he was that good. No matter what type of promises that were made to the incumbent quarterback, it's no way that you're going to pass up winning a national championship if you know that a kid's sitting that could play better than him. So with that said, this is going to be the first time the Arch Manning is playing on the big stage. He has a whole lot of pressure because everyone is saying he's the best quarterback in college football. He's the Heisman Trophy winner. He's the number one pick, and no one has seen him play extensively in college football. He had a couple starts last year when the starter was hurt, but even then, they were against nobody teams, and I saw him throw a couple interceptions in those games. He was only brought in for packages last year, kind of like Tebow. So I know that the team loves him. I know he's a morale guy. I know he makes plays with his legs that gets the team going. So I don't doubt that he has a great career and he has a good season. But as for now, compared to the hype that he's getting, I'd say that Arch Manning is a fade as well.
The hype, I mean, the guy's got to be one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen to live up to it, right? I mean, he's going to have like an Andrew Luck, John Elway type career because that's the type of hype I'm hearing for him. And I wonder if maybe it's a little bit too much to where if he just has pretty good season, right, he's going to be considered a disappointment. So it'll right. be interesting to see how the media works down there. And, you know, college football fans, as you talked about earlier, are not known for being the most patient people when it comes to their team. So it'll be interesting to see how that starts. And Steve in the chat agrees with you on Julian Sane. He says him and Jeremiah Smith are going to put on an absolute show at Ohio State tough games versus Texas and Penn State, but they'll be in the title mix once again. Saiyan is a gamer. Do you agree with that about Julian Saiyan out there in Ohio State?
Yeah, and more than that, I like Ryan Day. Ryan Day has never, no matter what style of quarterback he's had, from being the OC to being the head coach of Ohio State, we never had to worry about Ohio State's offense. Ryan Day is one of those guys who could easily be a pro coach. But now that he won the national championship, you know, he's going to get a statue. So I don't think that he leaves anytime soon. I think that he tries to cement himself in that long legacy of great coaches that they had at Ohio State. And I think he would definitely have Saiyan ready. I'm very excited for that game to talk about it a lot more next week.
All right. You ready to move to the pros and talk some NFC West football
before
here?
Before we do that, we were talking about week zero. What's your favorite today?
Oh, yeah.
You're saying about Hawaii. Tell the people why you like that game.
I was going to say, my favorite game is actually to watch is going to be the K-State-Ohio State game. But my favorite game to bet is Hawaii because this is almost like going to Denver or going to Miami in the NBA. This is one of the best home field advantages that we've ever seen, because not only is it a crazy flight, you're taking all these kids who have been going through, well, they don't do two-a-days anymore, but it's pretty grueling practice for what they're used to, right? And you get your week one out in Hawaii, like even if you're coming from Stanford, right? Pretty beautiful here in the Bay Area. It's not Hawaii, and we've seen that before. As you know, Hawaii's almost reminds me, Nuggets aren't like this anymore, but 3 or 4 years ago, Nuggets used to be bet at home, fade on the road. That's how I am with Hawaii, right? I mean, not saying that I blindly bet them, but I want to back them at home. I want to fade them on the road. Even if Stanford's a better program this year, Hawaii's only laying two. Hawaii minus two is my favorite pick for week zero. Although I think to be just be a fan and just tune in, for us, it's 9 a.m. out here on the West Coast. I'm really excited to see K-State and Iowa State.
We're going to really break down that game on Friday because I got to give out that K-State and Iowa State game. Everyone's going to want my play on that one. And it's going to be the big game of the week in week zero.
It's better than last year's week zero. I remember, I think when we did week zero last year, I thought we had all double-digit spreads.
I think you're right. Well, this year we have some decent matchups. We got, you know, Fresno State, as I told you, I'm interested to see what they did at the quarterback position because I always trusted their coach. They have one of the better coaches in college football. But it's a really good schedule. Hold on, I'm pulling it up right now on ESPN. I'm sorry, I was looking at something. I want to get past the one game that everyone is talking about and kind of get off into some of the other good matchups that we have. And some of the things that I'm interested to see, like Dan Mullen, first run with UNLV. UNLV has transfer quarterback over there. They went out to the transfer pool and really went crazy. They went and got a lot of players because they're spending that money, the fatigues, to try to build that UNLV program up. And they really were good last year. And I think that they're going to make another step with a coach as good as Dan Mullen is. Dan Mullen is one of the more underrated coaches in college football. So I'll be interested, even though they're playing a team that probably won't even keep the game within four touchdowns against them in Idaho State. I am interested just to see how their new look offense looks under Mullen and with their new quarterback. Another one to check out for me would be, as I said, Fresno State and Kansas definitely interests me because we know that Kansas has their quarterback coming back and a lot coming back. But as I said, Fresno State is traditionally a really tough team that runs the ball, plays good defense. So that 12.5, I think it's up to 13. That might be one we might look at. We'll talk about it a little bit more on Friday. We've got Sam Houston, who's always been a good team. They've won a lot of Division I AA championships before moving up to play with the big boys. Right down the street from Houston, Texas, man, on 59 North. And they get a chance to go to Western Kentucky, who puts up a lot of points. I don't know if the quarterback is coming back with Western Kentucky. I got to do a little research on that. But they have a good coach over there in Tyson Hilton, who usually has his team putting up points. I think Hilton's son might be the quarterback this season. I'll verify that for you guys on Friday. But I'm very interested in that game, too. Another double-digit spread. One of these double-digit dogs are going to hit for the money line, and we're going to try to find it here in the wagering world.
All right. So there you go. Yeah, that's how you do it here in broadcasting. Not only we give out the information for today, a quick plug for Friday's show here on the Wagering World. Of course, you'll notice sometimes we have technical difficulties, might be a little late getting here. That's why subscribing to the channel is so important. You get notified when we go live. And if something happens like today, we're a little late, you'll just get that notification. You don't have to keep refreshing the YouTube app. Of course, quick reminder to hit the thumbs up as well. You ready to hit a thumbs up here when we're talking about this NFC West five-star?
Yeah, let's hit that like button, man.
All right. So for me, five-star, I hate to do this, right, because our wagering world, right, we do this for the underdogs and for the underground. And I told you before we came on, I was trying to look for a long shot pick here, right? Yeah. I'm on Bet Online right now. Niners are plus 160. Rams are plus 165. Arizona Cardinals are plus 425. Seattle Seahawks plus 550. We were kind of high on the Seahawks last year. As a Raiders fan, I'd like it to be, but I also kind of believe it might be a slight quarterback downgrade. It'd be interesting to see how Darnold does outdoors. Of course, he was playing against some pretty good defenses in the NFC North. But also playing with arguably the best receiver in football and Justin Jefferson and one of the best offensive systems in football. And then, you know, the Los Angeles Rams sitting here at plus 165. This turmoil around Stafford, man, I have no idea if this is just all smoke and mirrors. And by week two, we're not even going to remember that we even had these conversations, or if this is Christian McCaffrey all over again, where the coaches are assuring us that he's fine and he's getting ramped up to play and that he's not going to end up playing at all. If Matt Stafford's not out there, I don't think the Rams really have a chance. I got to go.
What are they saying? There's something wrong with his shoulder?
His back.
Back, okay.
Which you know can be real tricky, especially at his age.
That's wrong, man. That's a bad.
Yeah. And the beating that he took in Detroit, you know, might be coming back to haunt him now, because he's always been a guy that, you know, and even the year they won the Super Bowl, right? I mean, one of the key traits that really endeared him to me and all the other football fans was his ability to stand in there, take the hit, and deliver the ball, right? He didn't get happy feet like Derek Carr did after he got hit a couple times, right? He stood in there and delivered it, and that might be the difference in their careers, two guys with a kind of similar arm strength here. But I'm not high on the Rams. And I'll be honest, as an actual NFC contender, I'm not high on the 49ers, but this is one of the easiest schedules that we've ever seen. And I do believe that Kyle Shanahan still does have the coaching chops for this team to put up points. They return Robert Saleh to the mix. That should improve the defense. And the 49ers, my concern with them, of course, is depth. But they still do have the top name frontline players on both sides of the ball. And in a division where every team is flawed, I'm still getting plus money. I'm not asking you guys to lay it here. Unfortunately, I am going to have to take the San Francisco 49ers to win the NFC West. But I'll tell you what, five-star, I'm not happy about it. I wanted to come on here and make a case for Seattle, but it simply doesn't add up.
I'm rolling with the best coach in the division. That's McVay. You know, you remember how McVay's son, yeah, Kyle Shanahan, last year put his hand on his head when they met at midfield after the game and kind of reminded him that, you know, I'm big brother in this. I think that McVay gets it done as long as they're healthy, as you said, with Matthew Stafford, because they cannot go to Jimmy G. G, I know, and they upgraded by Cooper Kupp. It fell off a little bit because McVay overused him, but McVay replaces him with Davante Adams, which is a clear upgrade. But I know Davante Adams was just like, I cannot believe I'm back on the team with Jimmy G. After all that happened in Las Vegas with him giving them those
and just to get your response, Al Harris in the chant, like Stetson Bennett. I do not at all. If they go Stetson Bennett, they might be in the running for Art Manning as well.
The mailman is coachable. He's the best quarterback in Georgia football history. And Matt Stafford played there too. I know it doesn't seem like it, but as far as in college stats, yeah, I'm sure they would rank Stafford higher because he has a Super Bowl ring. But if you just talk about strictly in college,
yeah,
the mailman was the better player, you know. So he's looked really good in the preseason. And, you know, McVay's one of those guys that if he gets – know a fondness for you, he's going to help you put some numbers up, as we've seen in the past. But the thing that I worry about the team is just like he'll help you, he'll turn his back on you quickly. And I don't know if he's turning his back on Stafford. I kind of think what's going on with him and Matt Stafford is about them not going to, they're not, it's clear that they're not giving him and Les Snead aren't giving him a new contract. Like they already pretty much let him know, like next year's, this year's your only year. We're trading you next year. So that's one thing. We saw him do the same thing with Jared Goff. They were buddy-buddy, and he just cut him off cold. So, you know, McVay's a cold businessman. So that's one thing to watch. Does Matthew Stafford feel the vibe from him and say, you know what, I'm not even playing for this guy. I'm going to say I'm hurt because, you know, I'm not going to let him use me up and just throw me away and put me on the trading block. Because you know him and his wife, they're Hollywood. They're a Hollywood couple. They're getting all of these commercials. They got their podcast. They don't want to leave L.A., you know, so we see. But they also don't want to lose money, so I know they're not going to give them any discounts when it's time to re-up. So that would be my worry about L.A., but as far as in on the field, I think they're a better team than the Niners are this year. I think Kyron Williams is one of the more underrated running backs in the entire league. I think that Blake Corum is going to be a really good backup this year. The thing I like most about the Rams is – just the greatness of Sean McVay. He can coach. He's learned as he's gotten old. He reminds me of Sean Payton, where he came in as a young kid, offensive wizard, played on the offensive side as a wide receiver. That's why you saw all of the numbers Cooper Kupp put up. He understands as he keeps playing that, hey, the Niners and in this division with, at the time, Pete Carroll and Seahawks, and you got the Niners and their defense, like, man, I got to play better defense. So he starts drafting defense, and now they have maybe the best defense in that whole, you know, conference. Excuse me, in that division, maybe the conference, because they do have a player that I think can easily win this year's Defensive Player of the Year, and that's Jared Verse. Jared Verse is a really, really, really good player, and he's a grown man. And I think that he's going to lead that defense this year with a bunch of kids over there, but they get to the ball, they rally, and they play really, really smart. A lot of continuity over there. You got Chris Shula coming back again. He was there last year. He replaced Raheem Morris and did a really good job. And Sean McVay is going to always have a team humming. OC is Mike LaFleur. We'll see if McVay lets him call the plays. But LaFleur has been a good OC. You know, he's the brother of Matt LaFleur. So I like the Rams. Give me the Rams at plus 195. I think that Devontae
Adams. Yeah, better price than me.
Yeah, I got plus 195. I think Devonta Adams has an outstanding season because you coming into it, you have to worry about Puka Nacua. Like, it's no way, it's no getting around that because he's such a volume, you know, receiver. So I think they have one of the better starting duos in the league. It's all about can they get in Matt Stafford because they are going to establish the run. McVay does a really good job of drawing up some innovative blocking schemes to get some gashes in the defense for Kyron Williams. And Kyron Williams won a ridiculous amount of games scoring a touchdown. He'll be my fantasy pick. I'm going to try to get him like in the second or third round. And best
he's going ball, in the third right now. He's going in the third.
Third round is where he's making it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't believe both Bucky Irvin and Chase Brown are going ahead of him, and I'm so shocked by that.
That's crazy. Chase Brown, I can understand. Chase Brown is an electric player. He does a lot in the pass game as well, but Kyron Williams scores every game. You can just count yourself 15 to 20 points if you're playing the model that my league plays on, which is on the NFL site. So, yeah, give me the Rams spread.
Let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals, the only team we didn't speak about. You know, we both think that Seattle's heading in the right direction. They're just not there yet. I do like the coaching of McDonald, and I think they finally brought it. Well, I like the offensive coordinator last year. It didn't seem to fit with the style of McDonald. But the Arizona Cardinals, the team we did not speak about, we've debated Kyler Murray before. Right now I see them sitting offshore over 8.5 wins is minus 135 under, getting a little bit of money back there with a plus 105. Do you think the Arizona Cardinals can go over their regular season win total and just a little more fantasy talk? Do you think we see a breakout season for Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Well, you know, I'm a fan of Kyler Murray. You know, I've always been, I think that he's the best quarterback to ever play Texas high school football by the numbers and by what he accomplished. He does have weapons this year with Marvin Harrison, but now who's going to be the second guy? You know, Michael Wilson, it's going to be Greg Dortch. Like, these are people who aren't really established in the league. Michael Wilson has had some flashes, but it's not been consistent enough. Dortch is a burner from Arizona State, but once again, lacking consistency. One guy to watch for them is the kid Xavier Weaver from Colorado. He's looked really good in the preseason. Slick route runner, great hands. Colorado really did a great job with their guys getting ready to be pros, man. You have a lot of guys from that team that are making noise in camps. Whether you look at the Ravens, whether you look at Carolina, a lot of Colorado receivers are well coached. James Conner, one of the more underrated running backs in the league. He always plays with a lot of heart, brings a lot of consistency in the running game for them. Trey McBride, one of the best tight ends in the league. You know, so they do have an opportunity. Their coach is a defensive-minded coach, so he should have the defense plan a little bit better. They still have their leader back there in Buda Baker. They drafted Will Johnson, who I think was a steal where they got him at, from Michigan. He might be the best corner that came out that whole draft. So we'll see. It's the thing that matters to me most about them, the only way that they're going to be able to crack those top two teams, because I put them on the same level with Seattle. I actually think they might be better than Seattle, but Seattle has a better roster. I think that they have to get a pass rush going because I don't see much from them on the line. They do get the veteran Calais Campbell back, who started his career at Arizona. So that is some leadership in the locker room. They may surprise some people. They are playing probably a little light schedule. I don't have the schedule in front of me right now, but I don't think that it should be, you know, it's probably what were they? They were they last place last year?
They were third place last year, weren't they?
Third place schedule. So yeah. You can never count out Kyler Murray. Just can he get the consistency that's needed from him, you know, and better body language too, Kyler. You got to stop getting mad at your receivers when they're not where they're supposed to be at. You know, he's such a competitor, but I just hope that they find a way to do something because right now they're where you don't want to be as a franchise. They're like kind of like how your Sacramento Kings teams were for years, where they're not bad, but they're not good enough, you know, so they're going to need some drastic changes over there for sure to compete.
Yeah, my concern always with Kyler is just his ability to hold up over the now 17-game season with the style of play that he plays. And he does a good job of getting out of bounds, but still that's a lot of hits with some really big men on a small frame. So I'd like to see the same success that we see from this Arizona team carry over into November and December, and I think that's what will get them to really turn it around. Do you have any other thoughts on the NFC West here before we give out some picks for tomorrow?
We're going to see if Brock Purdy was worth that money. You always were a Purdy guy. I never was a Purdy guy.
Yeah.
So I was a Purdy guy in the fact that I thought he was a pro quarterback and a starter. I just don't think that he's a guy that can, you know, pull. I think that he's more of a guy that can be on the wagon. I don't think that he can pull the wagon, you know, so they've lost a lot of people. So now with him getting the money that he is receiving, he's going to need Christian McCaffrey to be healthy. Shout out to my guy, Bobby, man. Bobby Williams, he runs a training facility on Pacific Palisades Highway out there in L.A., right on the water out there in the Pacific Palisades. A good friend of mine. It's called Stratosphere ATC. You guys go check that out online. If you get a chance, that's actually where Christian McCaffrey is training at. I was able to see some of his training and see him work out. And, you know, he's getting to it over there at Stratosphere and at some other places. But I was able to, you know, witness the workouts he does at Stratosphere due to my good friend Bob, who owns the facility. Also, Bijan Robinson works over there as well, but works out over there as well. But Christian McCaffrey is a guy that they are going to need. He's going to have to be old school Christian McCaffrey because I just don't think Brock Purdy has enough. We've seen every time that he had to carry the team and, you know, be that guy. It kind of goes back to what Cam Newton said about him. You know, it always shows his ugly head that he's not a guy. He's a guy that can be a part of the solution. He cannot be the solution. So I just am really interested to see if he lives up to the money that he got this year.
Yeah. And boy, because they have some other contracts too that are eating some things up. I know that they definitely regret that Brandon Ayuk deal, and he probably won't
be
back.
Is he playing this year?
He'll be back probably between week 6 to week 9. He'll be back.
You know, we talked about that last year. When they're gone, they're gone. You know, like I feel like ever since he was flirting with Washington, and then they do him so dirty, they allow Debo to go over to Washington instead.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was really dirty right there. So everyone knows that that's Jaden Daniels, like, baby best friend in the whole league. It's out of him and Malik Nabers. That kind of thing. He's real close with both of those guys, and they would not allow him to go over to Washington when he did not want to come back. They gave him the money and forced him to play. He gets hurt last year. And we'll see if he's able to overcome all of that, man.
All right. You got some plays here for tomorrow.
No, we got to go.
Well, actually, it's a live show. We can go today.
We got to go SEC first, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. And that's going to be all you.
SEC conference.
SEC breakdown. Take it away. What do you got for us?
As always, you know, the SEC is one of the top conferences in America. For many years, it was clearly above everyone. I still say that they produce the best NFL players. But, you know, the Big Ten is pushing back, and the Big Ten has always had more money than the SEC. But now they're catching up on the football side. And that all happened with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer really changed the Big Ten in the way that they do business when he came to Ohio State with that mentality that he learned from coaching at Florida. And now Michigan and the other programs in the Big Ten have caught up Penn State and stuff. But we're talking SEC, which is my favorite conference, the conference that I grew up watching the most. Now it's a different conference. As you know, they added Texas and Oklahoma, so it's a huge conference. And Texas A&M came before them, a couple years before them. The top tier, for sure, of this conference is going to be Texas, Georgia, Alabama, LSU. It's always the same guys. Ceno talked to me before when he was having the difficulties with his phone. He said he liked Georgia to win it. I'm not a fan of Gunnar Stockton. He is. I think he's undersized. But, hey, we just talked about Stetson Bennett and how well Kirby Smart did with him. Kirby Smart likes those type of quarterbacks, little scrappy guys. He's not into the Rolls Royce guys like Carson Beck, Justin Fields. He tends to not get along with them. He likes guys who kind of are team first guys and kind of the underdogs. He has another one now with Gunnar Stockton. So maybe Ceno's on the right side with that one. He's picking Georgia to win the conference. I think they have a really good number. If you don't mind looking it up for me, Spread, let me know what Georgia's odds are to win the SEC. But Alabama.
Got right now, will you break it down?
Alabama's going to be right there because Caleb DeBoer is a good coach. Ryan Williams back, an electric receiver, one of the best in the nation. Him and the kid from Ohio State are clearly heads and shoulders above everyone else. I'm interested to see how their quarterback Simpson looks, though. I'm not too familiar with his game, and I haven't seen him play a lot, but I do know that Caleb DeBoer is a really good quarterback whisperer, so he should have him ready, and they do have a lot of weapons on offense. You know I'm a diehard LSU guy, so when I speak about them, it might be some bias, a little bit less biased than most, because you guys know at the end of the day, I'm a sports bettor and I deal with data. But even though it's love for the team, because I am a fan of LSU and a lifelong fan of it, it's too based on the talent they have as well. And year in and year out, we know the LSU is going to always produce some of the best players in college football. You got South Carolina. I'm a big fan of Sellers. You remember I talked about him before anyone knew who Sellers was. I told him to watch for the kid with the glasses that plays quarterback of South Carolina. And now he's getting the love he's due. He kind of reminds me of Dak Prescott when he was in college. You know, real strong guy, great size, speed, athletic. A lot of people don't know, unless they've been watching football as long as me, that Dak Prescott was a great athlete before he got injured. So this kid, Sellers, kind of reminds me of him, Lenore Sellers. He'll be a name to watch. Florida, they have DJ Lagaway, one of the best pro-style quarterbacks you're going to see. He has the size. He can make every throw on the field. But how can Billy Napier adjust his offense to this kid to highlight him instead of doing the same things he did with Anthony Richardson and want to kind of keep him in that option-style offense that he likes to run? Ole Miss, we already talked about. Lane Kiffin has a lot of talent coming back. We also talked about his starting quarterback this year that's going to replace Jackson Dart, who's going to be a real, real good player in the SEC, Austin Simmons. Oklahoma, John Mateer, can he take Oklahoma to the next level? I know that I'll most likely be playing Oklahoma when they play Texas. I think that I will be taking those points because Venables is an excellent defensive coordinator, and as we said, that's what I worry about when it comes to Arch Manning. He hasn't seen a lot of these exotic defenses. He hasn't had a lot of playing time. And you guys got to remember, similar to what Shador went through last year. When you're popular as Arch, the other team is going to have your complete focus every week when you play them because they're tired of hearing about you. So that's one thing to also watch with the pressure that Arch is going to face. And not only him, his head coach is under a lot of pressure, too, to get it done. A&M, solid core coming back. Second time their quarterback will be around. He started half the season last year. He's a better quarterback than they've had at A&M before because he's a winner, coach's son. He should lift him up. Tennessee is going to fall off. I will fade Tennessee on the over and under on their wins this year. I don't expect them to be nearly strong, and I expect them to come short when it comes to making the college football playoffs. I don't think that they make it. Missouri, good coach. Quiet talent always over there, but just too much in the SEC for them to overcome. And I already told you about Auburn. I'm not trusting Hugh Freeze and Jackson Arnold. I'm just not. So that comes down to most likely Texas, Georgia, Alabama, LSU. At the number that I'm getting with LSU at plus 650, it's too hard for me to pass up. You got Nussmeier coming back. Nussmeier reminds me of Tony Romo. He plays a lot like him. Just enough movement. Real catchable balls, spreads the ball. Only thing that I don't like about Nuss is that sometimes he makes some boneheaded mistakes that puts the team in bad situations. Overall, though, great passer, bright future. I love the receivers over there. Aaron Anderson, great slot guy. Chris Hilton, tall kid that could play on the outside and make things happen. I think we'll see Tre'Davious Green become a bigger player in the SEC this year. That's the tight end they have, big recruit, like 6'6", 6'5". I think that he gets it done this year. But what I really like most about LSU is all the talent that's coming back on defense, man. You got both the Weeks brothers coming back, middle linebacker, weak side linebacker, West and Witt. They're just dogs. They're all over the field. they call Witt, what do they call them? It's a version of Honey Badger, but I'm not going to say it on here. But he's like the white honey badger. So they love him over there. And that's, he has a really cool nickname in the LSU fan base. Then they also have some really good cornerbacks over there. One kid coming in, DJ Pickett, is going to be a top five pick. He's the first 6'5 cornerback that we've seen, fluid and, you know, runs and moves like he's 5'11, but he's 6'5 with incredible wingspan. So he'd be one to watch. But the main kid that we have to keep an eye on always for this team is the great pass rusher. You know, Harold Perkins, he's playing a star position. He'll be wearing that famous number 7 for LSU. He got hurt last year. But now that Whit Weeks is such a good player, he can move from being in middle linebackers because they were bouncing around from middle linebacker to rush in. I think he's going to mostly concentrate this year on rushing the quarterback. And I think that that's where Harold Perkins excels, and that's where he's going to end up getting his money in the NFL as well. So give me LSU at plus 650, man. I think that that's a really good number. Brian Kelly, he tends to have his team unfocused. The one thing I don't like about Brian Kelly, he's continued the great recruiting that LSU has. I really thought he would be a Nick Saban type, a Midwest sound guy that comes in with all this Southern talent and is able to be, you know, a good mix for them. But what I don't like is he's not tough, man. For some reason, the same things we saw at Notre Dame. Remember when Notre Dame, when he was there and they were getting blew out in the playoffs to Alabama, mm-hmm. They always say, Notre Dame's not tough. And then they said, well, he's not getting the guys he needs. But then you see, now you have Freeman come through and Notre Dame is tough as nails. They're in the trenches playing with anybody. So I think it's more philosophy than recruiting. So Brian Kelly, you got to get us back to playing LSU style of football, which is, you know, in your face, you know, talking a bunch of noise and believing in themselves. I don't like that the fact that, you know, LSU isn't as aggressive as they've been in the past. So this is a do or die year for me with Brian Kelly, in my opinion. He has all the talent in the world. It's time to step up and do it. Alabama isn't nearly the force that they were before. Georgia isn't nearly the force they were before. Texas is still dealing with a quarterback that's a freshman. He's not a freshman, excuse me, but a first-time starter. A lot of pressure on him and a coach with a whole bunch of pressure on him. So LSU is kind of flying under the radar. This is the year to get it done for them at plus 650, man.
Yeah, and I hope they do, because our guy in the chat, Ry Cape, agrees with you. LSU has the talent. Not sure about Kelly. His teams don't have heart. So you're not the only one seeing that lack of fight. And as fun as it is, and, you know, I've been doing fantasy football all summer to watch the receivers make one-handed catches, to watch the running backs juke people out of their shoes. The game is won in the trenches. It's won with toughness. And let's see if Brian Kelly can kind of, you know, because all it takes is one win. Remember before, right, when OSU lost to Michigan, we had Ryan Day fired. We were thinking who the new head coach. It might have been Mike Vrabel. Things turned out different. So all it takes is one quality championship season to turn things around, and you can kind of get written. That's the great thing about sports, right, is it's not – you're not just defined by your past. Brian Kelly has an opportunity to take that away, but it's going to be a lot of hard work. We'll see if he gets it done. Offshore right now I'm seeing – Texas at plus 275, Georgia at plus 300, Alabama plus 400, LSU plus 650. So not only it seems like there's a tier here, right? We're picking these four teams, and we're choosing the team here because, of course, I'm going to be riding with you on this pick that gives you the best odds of the four teams that we can conceivably see winning. Of course, crazier things have happened here, but I like getting these longer odds, right? Maybe if you like Texas – maybe they start slow. Maybe they get a one-point win that doesn't necessarily take them out of position but lowers their thing. You might be able to get a better number in season if that's the team you're looking for. But when we're making these preseason bets, we're usually looking for these longer odds. Anything more on the SEC?
Nope, that'll be it for me.
All right, when we're going for our ball and parlay, since we're live, I can give out a play that starts here in about an hour and a half.
Let's do it.
All right, let's head down to Monterey. That's right. And you know that I like this tournament. It plays quickly, and we like to look for motivation here because some players are just getting a match or two in before they fly to New York. Some people are thinking, you know what, I'm not going to do much in New York anyways. Let me get these 250 right now. Let me get this trophy right now. Let me get this check right now. And a player who I always count on to bring it is Layla Fernandez. So I'm going to lay the 1.5 sets with her over Sramkova. Just the idea that Layla is the better player, and she's a player that I've watched that I feel that we get consistent performances from her. She doesn't necessarily play down to the tournament. We've talked about this before in both the WTA, but especially the ATP as well. Some of these top players, they're forced to play these 250s and these 500s because of sponsorships and because of the agencies they're with. That's not the case here with Fernandez. I think that she's not going to be worried about exhausting herself. I think that she's going to go on a run here. I'm laying 1.5 sets, Layla Fernandez against Sramkova. Starts in 1.5 hours.
There we go there. Okay, and I'm going to play, let's go first set with Marie Buskova against Beatrice Haddad Maia. You know, she's another one of those that was tinkering with the steroids. And we've seen that since she got caught, she came back for a little while, excelled, and now her game is falling off completely. Marie Buskova is just a solid player. She's a pusher, but she is consistent from the baseline. Better on hard court than people think. And I think at first set at minus 190 is a good play on her against Haddad Maia. That's today in Monterey. Another one that I'll be playing for tomorrow, you know, we have in New York the qualifying rounds going for the U.S. Open. So I'm going to ride with first set. We're going to do a two-leg parlay, guys. Pay attention closely. It's going to be first set, Petra Marchenko, young girl, 21-year-old, who's been really hot. She faces Russian Alina Chariva. Chariva doesn't start fast, so Marchenko does. It's a pretty heavy number at minus 340 for the first set, but it's worth it if we put it with my girl, Ito. You know, Ito is one of my favorite ladies to watch. We're going to take her for the full match against a veteran from Spain, Maristina Zuleta. They're going to play tomorrow morning. So that's going to be Ito full match at minus 300 times Marchenko first set minus 340. That'll be minus 138 payout on that one. And guys, keep an eye this evening. Maybe you want to jump in live. It seems like this lady, you were speaking about how certain players are taking this more serious than others because some are more thinking about what's happening next week, which is, you know, the biggest tournament maybe of the year. I think the U.S. Open is past Wimbledon because Wimbledon, it has too much you know, pomp and circumstance now. And these new kids don't care for all that. They don't care about all that, the tradition anymore. I think they like the French Open and U.S. Open much better than Wimbledon. It's a lot more important to the players. So a lot of people are going to be thinking about the U.S. Open. But what did Spread just say? He just said about this. Some of these are like, hey, this is a 250 I could take real quick here in Monterey. Alicia Parks is one of those type ladies. I think Navarro will be looking ahead and thinking about getting to New York. And even though Navarro has had a good year, minus 280 is just too much against her with anybody right now, especially as you said, the fast surface. Alicia Parks served really well yesterday. And you know, if she's serving good, she has one of the best serves on the ladies tour. Watch it live. I don't know if I'll take Alicia for the first set because Navarro tends to start faster, but I do think Alicia Parks full match plus 200 is one that I will take a look at. And I for sure will look to take her like the second set if she loses the first set. I think that she can take a set off of Emma Navarro. Alicia Parks excels in these type of tournaments where it's 250s and, you know, no one's really focused. And she's looking at, hey, I can steal a check on this one. So I think that Alicia Parks is definitely a live dog tonight at Monterey. So just to review my picks again, I'm going to roll with Maria Buzkova. She starts in about an hour and a half against Haddad Maia. Just the first set at minus 180, minus 190, depending on the book you had. Tomorrow in the U.S. Open, qualifying rounds. This is the final round before the actual tournament kicks off. I'm going with Ito at minus 300, along with Petra Marchenko, first set, minus 340. Put those two together for a minus 138. And as I said, not an official play, but keep your eyes on Alicia Parks. I do think she's a live dog.
Yeah, I like these 250s. We can look for some upsets here, but also ride the favorites that we know don't know how to dial it back, right? I mean,
yeah.
To me, Fernandez reminds me of one of those girls we all go out, you know, we go play, and the one guy's just out there playing like it's the NBA Finals, and it's like, man, we're just playing some basketball before we go out later tonight, right?
Like, right. You know, she's extremely intense.
She doesn't know how to turn it down. So
Her dad played football. Well, you know, the real football. He was a soccer player. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. She just doesn't know how to turn it down. But that's the type of players I'm looking to back in this tournament. So we'll be back Friday. Of course, we're going to have a full U.S. Open preview. I've already done some work. I've already put some futures in. But like we did before, I'm going to tease that ahead because I think I know you're going to like my pick over there on the women's side. And then, of course, we'll discuss the men as well. So I'm excited about the U.S. Open. When you were saying that about the tournament, the one thing I don't like, I wish they would go a week earlier. I hate that they go head-to-head with football. Like right now, everything's dead. The tennis schedule is so outdated, you know, and the French Open and the Wimbledon being so close together. We'll solve the problems of the tennis world a different time. Do you have any final words up for the people before we get out of here?
If you guys are rocking with the Wage World, hit that like button right now. We appreciate all who tuned in live. If you didn't get a chance to tune in live and you're now watching it on replay later, hit that like button. I did give a play for Thursday. That way you do have something to play if you missed our live plays for this evening in Monterey. We were able to break down some football with you guys. I enjoy talking football with you guys. You know I've been really good at quarterback, man, and I gave you guys some quarterbacks that I'll be looking to fade and some that I think are underrated and are going to have better years than the prognosticators think. Guys, as always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan I know. That's my father, John H. Lindsay. I do this for you, Dad. I know he's upset because the Astros are on a horrendous streak right now. We can't score runs for anything. So hopefully soon we get it back together. The pitching is really strong. We need the bats to wake back up. So we'll be looking for that over the next coming weeks. You guys go to www.thewageringworld.com. Get some of the merch like the Live from Sumberland cap, Waging World mug. We got all types of merch for you guys. You go check out the site. That's www.thewageringworld.com. We'll be back Friday. Tomorrow I'll be on ESPN 97.5 out of Houston with my OGs, the Texas Hall of Fame radio announcers, John Granato and Lance Zierlein of the NFL Network. I'll be giving my plays for week zero there, but I'll come down and break them down in full on Friday here. I also gonna be doing a show with Jay Money on Friday. We're going to get back to talking some football. So I'll be easy to find. because it's football season. Hey, man, for spread us there. Cena will be back on Friday. 5-star in Vegas. This is The Waging World. Thank you for tuning in.